Picture this. It's 333 BC, and the greatest conqueror in human history is standing in the ancient city of Gordium in what's now modern-day Turkey. Alexander the Great, barely 23 years old, has just arrived with his massive army, fresh from victories across the known world. But he's not here for another battle. He's here because of a legend, a mystery that has stumped the greatest minds for centuries. In the center of the city sits an ancient ox cart, and attached to this cart is the most complex knot anyone has ever seen. We're talking about a knot so intricate, so impossibly tangled, that it looks more like a sculpture rather than something that could ever be untied. The locals called it the Gordian Knot, named after their legendary king Gordius, who tied it decades earlier. But here's where it gets interesting. There's a prophecy, an oracle that had proclaimed that whoever could untie this knot would become the ruler of all Asia. All of Asia. Think about that for a second. We're talking about a dominion over the largest, richest empire in the world has ever known. For generations, the most brilliant scholars, the wisest philosopher, the most skilled craftsmen had come to study this knot. They would spend days, weeks, even months analyzing every twist and turn. They'll trace each loop with their fingers, trying to understand the pattern. They'll bring tools, measuring devices, diagrams. Some would camp out beside the knot for entire seasons, convinced they were on the verge of discovering the secret sequence that would unravel the entire thing. But every single one of them failed. The knot remained tied, mocking their efforts, growing more legendary with each failed attempt. So now here comes Alexander. The word had spread through his army about this famous knot and his prophecy. His generals are probably thinking, great, now our fearless leader is going to waste weeks trying to solve some ancient puzzle when we could be conquering actual cities. Alexander approaches the cart. The crowd gathers, the locals, the soldiers, the scholars who has been studying the knot for years. Everyone falls silent as this young Macedonian king examines the knot that has defeated the greatest minds of the age. And he walks around it slowly, studying it from every angle. You can almost hear the crowd holding his breath. The scholars are probably thinking, okay, let's see what this hotshot military genius think he can figure out what we couldn't. So Alexander stops. He stares at the knot for a long moment, and then he does something that shocks everyone. He draws the sword. The crowd gasps. The scholar starts shouting, wait, you can't. Slice. With one decisive stroke, Alexander cuts right through the center of the knot. The rope falls away in pieces. The knot that has stumbled the greatest minds of for centuries is destroyed in a single moment of bold action. The crowd erupts. Some are cheering. Others are outraged. That's cheating, yo, they cried. That's not how you untie a knot. But Alexander puts away his sword and calmly says, the oracle said whoever could loose the knot would rule Asia. It never said how. And you know what? History proved him right. Alexander went on to create the largest empire the ancient world has ever seen, stretching from Greece to India. Now, what the heck does this have to do with golf? Everything. Because standing over a putt, most of us are exactly like those ancient scholars. We're analyzing every possible break, second-guessing every read, looking for the perfect solution to an impossible, complex puzzle. Meanwhile, the great putters, they're like Alexander. They see their line, they commit to it completely, and they execute with unwavering confidence. Sanju Lee, and you're listening to Better Golf Academy. I'm here to share the best secrets of improving your score without boring you with mechanical swing tips. It's all about strategy and your mental game. So are you ready? All right, let's go. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Better Golf Academy podcast. I am your host, Hanju Lee. Thank you all so much for listening. Did you have a good week? I had a great week. If you remember on my last episode, I talked about the green space effect, how being in nature has been shown to reduce stress hormones and improve mood. Well, we decided to head to Big Bear's glamping site called Postcard Cabins to celebrate our 32nd anniversary. It was amazing. Just to disconnect from the world for a bit and just slow it all down. We spent most of our time just walking, eating, sitting by the fire. I highly, highly recommend it. I miss you guys though. You know, I love golf and I try to keep everything in perspective. So I don't blast out in angry profanities and have a fit out there on the spot. So I keep pretty chill until, you know, the one thing that gets me passionately angry is hitting a great drive, executing the perfect approach shot on the green, pin high, and then freaking three putting. Missing my second putt just puts me over the edge. It's one thing I really want to never, ever have to experience as long as I live. And when I have several three putts during a round, I'm obsessively working on my technical strokes, figuring out what went wrong with my mechanics. But here's what I've learned recently, and my thoughts about putting are so much more than just how I move the putter. In fact, I would argue that once I have a halfway decent stroke, which I think I do, which most of you, I think, believe that you do, I'm convinced that putting success comes down to three fundamental pillars that have almost nothing to do with your technique. And today we're diving deep into what I call the three pillars of putting. These are the elements that separate the great putters from the frustrated three putters. And here's the beautiful thing. You can master all three of these without changing a single thing about your putting stroke. So let's get into it. Pillar number one, reading the green, the art of seeing what's really there. Let me start with a story that will blow your mind. There's this researcher named Dr. Craig Mahoney who studies visual perception in sports. A few years back, he did this fascinating experiment with professional golfers and weekend players. He showed them exactly the same putt on the exact same green and asked them to describe what they saw. The weekend players, they gave him 15 different descriptions. It breaks left. No, it breaks right. It's uphill. Nah, it's clearly downhill. The tour players, nearly identical description, all of them. Every single one. Same green and same putt, but the professionals were literally seeing something different than the amateurs. Not because they had better eyes, but because they had trained their brains to process visual information more effectively. Here's what's crazy. Your brain is constantly lying to you about what you're seeing on the green. It's not your fault. It's just how your visual system works. Your brain takes shortcuts, making assumptions, and fills in gaps. And on the putting green, those shortcuts will cost you strokes. Let me give you a perfect example. You know that feeling when you're absolutely convinced that putt breaks right, but then you watch your ball break left instead? You're not losing your mind. Your brain got fooled by what the researchers called visual anchoring. Here's how it works. When you first look at a putt, your brain grabs onto the most obvious visual cue. Maybe it's the slope behind the hole or the way the fairway runs in distance. And then it uses that cue to interpret everything else. But here's a problem. The most obvious visual cue is often wrong. I played this course called Black Gold in Yorba Linda, which is about 10 miles from Anaheim. And someone said that everything breaks towards Disneyland. I didn't believe him. Yeah, whatever. There's one green. I'm standing on the green looking at an 8-footer for birdie. And I'm absolutely convinced that it breaks to the right. Disneyland is on the left. So I aim towards my initial thought and visual, and I stroked it very confidently, and to watch the break the wrong way. It breaks towards Disneyland, completely the opposite direction. I was so focused on what I thought I saw that I missed the actual slope on the green right around the hole. That's when I started studying how the best putters actually read the greens. And what I found was fascinating. They don't just look at the putt from behind the ball. They have a systematic process that eliminates the visual tricks our brain plays on us. Here's what the research shows. The most accurate green readers use what they call multiple perceptive integration. That's a fancy way of saying they look at the putt from several different angles and piece it all together. And here's the key. This is where most golfers mess up. They don't just look from different spots randomly. They have a specific sequence that builds a complete puzzle. First, they look from the low side of the putt. This gives them a clearest view of overall slope and grain direction. Your brain processes the slope information most accurately when you're looking from below. Did you hear that? Your brain processes slope information most accurately when you're looking from below. Then, and this is crucial, they walk to the highest side and look back towards the hole. This perspective reveals the subtleties that you miss from behind the ball. It's like looking at the sculpture from different angles. You need multiple viewpoints to understand the full shape. But here's where it gets really interesting. Dave Pelz, who's probably studied putting more scientific than anyone else, found that the best green readers also use their feet, not just their eyes. They're feeling for the slope, walking around the hole. Your feet can detect slope changes that your eyes miss. It's like having a built-in level. But most golfers ignore this information because they're so focused on the visual stuff. I mean, you've seen players do the aim point, right? It's the similar concept on using your feet. The science backs this up. Researchers at the University of Rochester found that the golfers who incorporate tactile information, feeling the slope with their feet, improve their green reading accuracy by over 40%. But here's the thing that really separates great green readers. They commit to what they see. This brings us right back to Scott Hoke on that 1989 Sunday at Augusta. He had the skills to read that putt correctly, but he didn't trust his read. So the doubt crept in. There's this concept in sports psychology called analysis paralysis. The more you think about something, the less confident you become. Dr. Sian Belloc at University of Chicago has done extensive research on this. She found that when the expert performers start overthinking automatic processes, their performance actually deteriorates. Think about it. When you're driving a car and you don't consciously think about every micro adjustment you make to stay in your lane, you just do it. But if you suddenly started thinking about each tiny steering input, you'll probably start weaving all over the road. Same thing happens with green reading. Your first instinct, the initial read when you approach the putt, is usually your most accurate. But then doubt creeps in. Wait, does it really break that much? Or should I look at it one more time? And the more you look, the less sure you become. Here's what I want you to try. Next time you're on the practice green, read each putt once from behind the ball, once from the low side, then commit. Don't second guess. Don't take another look. Just trust your process and stroke the putt. I bet you'll be amazed at how much better you read the greens when you stop overthinking it. All right, pillar number two, committing to your line. The power of unwavering trust. This brings us perfectly to our second pillar. Commitment to our target line, okay? And man, this is where I see more golfers sabotage themselves than anywhere else. The biggest difference isn't talent or technique, it's commitment. When you read a putt, you should be 100% committed to that line. When most amateurs read the putt, they're about 70% committed, and that 30% doubt kills them. Most golfers read a putt, pick a line, and then start doubting themselves as they're setting up. Maybe it breaks a little more. What if I'm wrong about the speed? Should I aim a little more left? And what happens when you're not fully committed to your line is that your stroke reflects that uncertainty. You subconsciously try to help the ball by making tiny adjustments during your stroke. You might push it a bit if you think you aimed too far left, or you might pull it if you think you didn't account for enough break. Dr. Bob Rotella, who works with some of the greatest putters in golf history, puts it this way in his book, Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. Confidence in putting comes from commitment to your line, not from having the perfect line. A committed putt to the wrong target is often better than an uncommitted putt to the right target. Think about that for a second. He's saying it's better to be wrong and committed than right and wishy-washy. That seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? But the researchers backed this up completely. There's this really cool study from Journal of Motor Behavior where researchers had golfers putt to targets while being certain about their aim versus uncertain about their aim. The golfers who were certain, even though they were aiming at the wrong spot, had more consistent stroke mechanics and better distance control than golfers who were uncertain but aiming at the correct spot. Your brain and body performs better when they have a clear, unambiguous target. Doubt creates tension, and tension kills putting strokes. Ask yourself, on a scale from 1 to 10, how confident are you in that read? If you think anything less than 8, you should read it again, because if you're not confident in your line, you're not going to make confident stroke. But here's the thing, and this is where it gets really interesting from neuroscience perspective. Commitment isn't just about confidence. It's about simplifying the task for your brain. You see, when you're 100% committed to a line, your brain has one job: roll the ball down that line at the right speed. Simple, clear, executable. When you're only 70% committed, your brain is trying to do multiple things all at once. Roll the ball down the line you picked while also making real-time adjustment for the line you think might be more correct while also managing your doubt about the whole thing. It's like trying to have three conversations at once. You're not going to do any of them well. And this is why great putters often talk about picking a spot on their line. They don't just aim generally towards the hole. They pick a specific blade of grass or something on the green 12 to 18 inches front of their ball, right on their intended line. Tiger was used to do this religiously. If you watch old footage of him putting, you'll see him crouch down behind the ball, tracing his line with his fingers, then picking a specific spot. Once he had that spot, he never wavered. His only job was to roll the ball over that spot. The spot technique works because it gives your brain a concrete, specific target instead of vague instructions on aim left of the hole. You're giving your brain a precise instruction. Roll the ball over that brown spot 18 inches ahead. Being specific breeds commitment. Commitment breeds confidence. Confidence breeds great putting. But here's where most golfers mess this up. They pick their spot, but they don't trust it. They stand over the putt looking at their spot, but they're also stealing glances at the hole, second guessing their read, letting doubt creep in. Once you've done the work of reading the green and picking your line, your job is to execute that line with complete commitment. Not to reevaluate it, not to second guess it, just to execute it. Which brings up to our third and final pillar, pace control. The ultimate differentiator. If I told you I could give you one skill that would immediately take 3 to 4 strokes off your score, would you want it? Of course you would. Well, that skill is pace control, and it's the most underrated aspect of putting. Here's a stat that will blow your mind. Analyzing thousands of putts on the PGA Tour, they have found that this control, not line, is responsible for about 80% of putting errors. Let that sink in. 8 out of 10 missed putts are missed because of speed, not direction. But here's what's crazy. Most golfers spend about 90% of their time or practice working on their stroke mechanics and maybe 10% working on distance control. We've got it completely backwards. And that's the problem right there. We treat distance control like it was automatic, something that would just happen naturally if our stroke was good enough. But pace control is a skill unto itself, a skill that requires specific practice and a systematic approach. Here's what the researchers show. Great putters don't just have a good touch. They have what researchers call a calibrated touch. They've trained their neuromuscular system to consistently produce specific distances with specific stroke length. Okay, think about it like this. When you're throwing a ball to someone, you don't think about mechanics of your throwing motion. You look at your target. Your brain automatically calculates how hard to throw based on the distance. That's calibrated touch. That calibration only works because you've thrown thousands of balls over your lifetime. Your brain has built up a database of distance to effort relationships. Most golfers haven't built that database of putting. They've never trained their brain to associate specific stroke length with specific distances. So every putt becomes a guess. But the great putters, they've got it all dialed in. The great putters practice what's called a rhythm scale. They make practice strokes of different length, short, medium, long, and then putt balls to different distance using those exact stroke length. And that literally is a calibrating their system. There's a simple way to think about it. If you want to develop three basic gears for your putting stroke, a short gear for putting inside 10 feet, a medium gear for putting like 10 to 30 feet, and a long gear for putting anything beyond that. Each gear has a specific backswing length and a specific rhythm. The key is practicing these gears until they become very, very automatic. Okay, I'm going to bring it all together. So we covered the three pillars. Reading the green accurately. Number two, committing it completely to the line. And three, controlling your pace with a calibrated touch. But here's the thing. These aren't three separate skills. They are part of an integrated system. And if you think about great putters throughout history, Ben Crenshaw, Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, they don't just excel at one aspect of putting. They've mastered the entire system. And that system is built on the foundation of routine and process. And here's what I mean. Great putters don't just wing it out there. They have a specific, repeatable process that they follow on every single putt. Not because they're obsessive compulsive, but because the routine eliminates variables. And in putting, variables are the enemy. So try this. First, read the putt from behind the ball. Get your initial impression of the slope, grain, and distance. This is your anchor read, your brain's first, usually the most accurate assessment. Second, walk to the low side of the putt and confirm your read. Look for anything you might have missed from behind the ball. As you walk, feel the slope with your feet. Third, if this is a long putt, walk to the high side for the final perspective, but keep this brief. You're confirming, not rereading. And fourth, walk back to your ball, pick your specific target, not just left edge, right edge, but a specific spot on the intended line that's about 12 to 18 inches front of your ball. And fifth, take your practice strokes while looking at your target spot. This is where you're calibrating your pace and committing to your line. And sixth, set up the ball, look at your target spot one final time, and then stroke the putt without any doubt or any hesitation. The key is making this routine automatic. When you have a consistent process, your brain doesn't have to make a decision under pressure. It just follows the program. Because at the end of the day, putting isn't about having the perfect stroke. It's about having the perfect process. And guess what? I don't want to just leave you there, so I created a set of practice drills to specifically work on these three pillars of putting. So just go to bettergolfacademy.com/putting and you can download the drills that you can work on. Well, thanks for being here with me today. I learned a bunch diving into these three pillars, and I hope you did too. And if you did, could you do me a big favor? Could you please share this episode with a golfer who needs to hear this? And also please leave me a review. I would love for you to subscribe. And if you want to chat with me directly, go to bettergolfacademy.com/hello and leave me a note. I promise to get back to you. And you know what? Let's keep building this Better Golf Academy community together. And in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to Better Golf Academy podcast. I really appreciate you being here. Be awesome and bye for now.